Hello and welcome to the Earth Trust podcast. My name is Verity Warne, Head of Communications at Earth Trust. At the end of November, we find National Tree Week, the UK's largest annual tree celebration, which marks the start of the winter tree planting season. So we thought it would be a great time to talk to our senior ranger, Tim Reed, about all things trees and how we manage woodlands at Earth Trust.
My role is really sort of being the lead sort of person on the ground, taking on the majority of practical land management work, coordinating our volunteers, coordinating our other rangers, and that is varied from kind of grassland management, woodland management, wetlands. We've got a real variety of habitats, so it's a very varied work plan, very seasonal, depends on the time of year. Often the richest parts of habitats are where they bump up and meet against others.
Yeah.
So where your grassland meets your woodland, and where your wetland in the form of ponds or backwaters comes into a meadow. So having all of those habitats on the site here is a fantastic thing to have, but it does come with its challenges. Each of those three sections, you could spend a lifetime learning everything there is about managing, surveying, monitoring. So we have to take a real holistic approach and look at all of it together.
Yeah, absolutely. So it would be great if you could say a little bit about the variety of woodlands that Earth Trust looks after and sort of what's so important about those woodland areas.
For me, our sort of standout star of the show is Little Whittenham Wood, which is our oldest block of woodland. It's what we'd sort of call a semi-natural woodland, which means that it is a historically natural woodland, but it also has had a lot of planting over the years of various species. It's mixed hardwood and softwood. It's had quite a lot of intervention over the years from various owners, ourselves included. But it's a really fantastic place to get involved, get into the sort of woodland, get involved in all of the various sort of management work that happens there and our volunteering. But it's a really varied mixed habitat. But we have a real range across the site.
Yeah.
So we have a few research woodlands. Paradise Wood and Neptune Wood are both more recent. They're sort of 20 to 30 years old. And they are collections of trees specifically planted initially for research into timber quality, into tree diseases and pests, and with the potential, certainly in a couple of cases, of becoming what we'd call seed orchards to produce seed long term, which can then be utilized in the wider country, in the wider world. So those come with their own particular set of challenges and a different way of managing compared to our sort of more natural Little Whittenham Wood. We have Broad Arboretum, which is another sort of collection. It's a collection of all trees in native to Oxfordshire. And it's a really good educational resource. It's very different to any natural woodland you'd ever be in because they're all planted in blocks together. So it's a great place to learn about your tree ID.
Yeah.
And sort of practice that sort of identifying, you know, two different types of silver birch or two different types of birch, silver and downy, which can look very similar. And then we have over at North Farm, we have a variety of what we sort of call farm woodland blocks, which historically, we bought the farm in 2010, historically were planted as part of a sort of government funded endeavour to get more trees and woodland into farmland. They are not as interesting biodiversely from a biodiversity point of view as some of our other areas, but they've got lots of potential. They're really key in linking up the landscape.
Right.
And connecting hedgerows and these woodland blocks to sort of stop, to reduce the risk of these isolated patches of woodland that over time become more and more sort of more and more isolated and less diverse over time.
But we also have a farm that we manage. So how important are trees in a farming context?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's an idea of being really popular at the moment called agroforestry, which is integrating trees into farmland. And when I look around the farm here, we are looking to do more in the route of agroforestry. But when I look around, I think we already do an awful lot.
Mm.
We've retained and created a lot of hedgerows around the site. All of those hedgerows have mature trees within them.
Yeah.
And that's such an important part of linking the landscape and creating these wildlife corridors, but also providing habitat for various insects, mammals, wildlife that will help pollinate, pest control, have all of these positive impacts on your crops, which otherwise may have to be done through the use of chemicals or less sort of less favourable means.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have trees across the whole farm, and they're a really key part of everything that we do.
Have you got a favourite tree?
I do. It's in Little Whittenham Wood. There's an oak right in the middle of Little Whittenham Wood. It's a really beautiful tree. It's hidden.
It's off, so no one knows where it is.
It's off and away in the woods.
You're not going to disclose its
location. No, I won't disclose its location. We have some very nice old ancient trees, and yeah, they are.
I like the idea of you going off and climbing it, and we know no one knows where you are, but you're up the tree.
Where I go for a quiet lunch when I'm going to be somewhere. Yeah,
exactly. So how do you think our woodlands and the trees we manage, or the way we manage them, kind of connect to the Earth Trust's strategy about, you know, demonstrating and influencing and engaging? Is it different for the, presumably different parts of our woodland have a different kind of role to play there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when people think about woodlands and trees, there's this sort of idea that planting trees, really, really, really good, cutting trees down, really, really, really bad. Otherwise, you just leave woodlands to do their own thing. Mm. And there is some scope for that in certain places, but actually woodlands really thrive when they're being managed.
Yeah.
The sort of golden age of woodlands, particularly from a wildlife point of view, was hundreds of years ago when we were coppicing woods for hedge laying. We were taking out materials for building. We were taking out materials for firewood, for fuel, and for all of and for forage for livestock. And increasingly now, a lot of timber products that you find in the country are imported. Mm. And I think what we have here is a really unique opportunity to a really key opportunity to help promote local timber and well managed woods, both commercially and for a wildlife and biodiversity standpoint. Yeah. And that's not even beginning to sort of touch on the importance of health and well-being in woodlands and trees. There's a lot of research that's gone in to show the importance of getting out into green spaces. I know I immediately feel calmer when I'm in and around woodlands, and if I need to escape sort of the stresses of real life, that's where I'll go. I know a lot of other people feel the same way. So there's all of these benefits to woodlands, which are not always obvious or easily understood. But take, for example, Little Whittenham Wood. We've had thinning operations recently where we go through with some quite large machinery. We are in the process of thinning out the softwood conifer blocks to promote hardwood regeneration, so more native species like oak and beech and elm and whatever else we might be producing. We're taking out the stuff that was planted as a crop. Mm. And that can look very destructive, particularly as and when it's happening. But that cyclical management, that rotation of removing and replenishing is really important in a woodland. And it is replicating natural processes like the big storms that blow through, knock over dozens of trees. That really kickstarts all the light floods in, and it kickstarts a new generation of growth. And our work is designed around replicating those natural processes.
There's a lot of, obviously, with the Queen's Green Canopy and people really realising the benefits of trees for climate and your carbon sequestration, as you were saying, a lot of emphasis on planting trees. But I've heard you also talk about the importance of the right tree in the right place.
Yeah, so there is this big emphasis on tree planting at the moment, and it is a wonderful thing. We can really benefit from having more trees across the site. But the right tree in the right place is absolutely essential. We have some really fantastic habitats here at the Earth Trust. Our amazing wildflower meadows, the sort of hay meadows, cut for hay every summer, grazed, and every spring we get this flush of amazing flowers. It would be a waste to plant trees all over those. Mm. Also, what you've often found in particularly historic in planting operations is, if there's not trees in a particular area, there's probably a reason. Maybe the way the water moves through the ground, the hydrology, maybe that isn't quite right. Maybe the soils drain too readily, or they're too exposed, whatever it might be. So that's something to take into consideration. But the key one for me is this link in the landscape idea. Mm. We don't want to start going out sticking clumps of trees in places where they're completely isolated. And we don't want to start putting out clumps of trees that, you know, are a mix of species that aren't suited to that soil type or that habitat or whatever. Much better if we can look at areas that maybe historically have been wooded and forested, That's a fantastic way to approach it. You can find some great resources online of old maps, which can show woodlands in places we didn't know they were. And the added benefit of planting on top of old, you know, sites that may have once had trees is it's incredible what seeds can survive in the ground.
Mm.
And perhaps what may seem like a new plantation 50 years down the line, suddenly we start to see bluebells coming up because the bulbs have been there the whole time. They've just been waiting for the habitat. And that is possible. That sort of development and seed bank can really can last a very, very long time from areas that have been deforested.
That's amazing.
So the right tree in the right place is really key. And also with the push for lots of planting, the other thing that's really, really important is trees live for a really long time. And so whilst we can often find funding to go out and purchase trees to plant, and it's great, every year I have groups from various places come and help us with tree planting. The bit which then can be quite tricky is the ongoing maintenance, removing tree guards 5 years later once they've become established, looking into those future thinning operations, looking into to protecting those young trees from weeds or drought weather like we've had this summer. And that ongoing maintenance cost is something that we really have to think carefully about, because if we plant more trees than we can look after, we're gonna be wasting all of that good effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And not allowing them to reach their potential of what they can actually do for us and habitat as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got to have in mind what the end goal is. Are we looking to produce a crop? Are we looking to produce a species-rich mixed woodland? Is it for research purposes? We need to know what we're aiming for with all that potential.
Is that something that you think is also becoming more of a concern as the pressure, maybe pressure is not the right word, as the interest in biodiversity net gain comes on board, because those models don't always think about the ongoing maintenance?
It's very much a concern of mine. Across a lot of aspects of how we work and how we're funded, there is often funding available to help us really kickstart big projects and do some really amazing things. Where that often trips is 5, 10, 15 years down the line, when that money is long gone and you've got this habitat which needs maintenance.
And
it'd be a real shame if we have all these excellent projects taking place, whether it's big woodland planting or wetland creation work as we've done, and then that support further down the line isn't available.
Yeah.
And with things like ash dieback, is a really good example. A large part of our management of trees is also managing our public access and the safety side of things. We do it every year. We've been doing it forever. We'll survey all of the trees that could fall on or near a footpath and trim, cut back, remove trees when they pose a risk. And ash dieback is leading towards an extreme case of this tree safety work, where essentially we're going to have a few very, very busy years, which could equate to a few very, very expensive years. And how we manage that and offset the cost is going to be one of the challenges that we really face here coming up.
I was going to ask you a side question, actually, when you were talking about Paradise Wood and Neptune Wood, as those are relatively young woodlands. Mm. What counts as a mature woodland?
It's a bit of a blurred line, really. It depends a lot on the species. Faster growing species, wet woodlands that are dominated willow and aspen and things like that will mature far quicker than, oak plantations like Neptune. As a sort of loose definition, I suppose, for me, I think a mature woodland is when you start to lose sight of the rows of trees that have been planted.
When it becomes less clear that someone planted it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm often asked why trees are planted in rows, and it's something I do on larger projects, but not on smaller ones. And it's primarily because you want to fit in the maximum number of trees as you can, and if it's in rows, you fit more into a determined space. And although it looks very unnatural, the idea is you're planting them all too close to one another anyway. And that thinning operation that we're talking about is a key part of that early management of a new woodland.
Right.
Because you go out and you take out the less healthy trees, the less successful ones. Some will die off through competition anyway, and you remove those. And then you might have the next flush of younger growth coming through, whether that's seeded or planted. And over time, with a few thinning operations, those rows and the tree guards and all the signs that it was planted go away. And that's when I look back at it and say, now that's a mature woodland.
And that's the thing with trees. Everything takes a really long time. Tim and I talked a little about what it's like to invest all this time in trees that he may not be around to see reach their full glory.
There's a bit of a push at the moment to help farmers realise what they might have with their woods. And in terms of farms becoming carbon neutral, having trees on site is a really key part of that, because that carbon store can offset the farming operations to some degree. And a key thing, I think, for farms particularly, where the money comes and goes quite quickly, and many farmers might make do without a pension, or the property or the farm or some aspects of the site will be their sort of pension pot. Planting a load of oak trees early doors and then thinking, right, 70 years down the line, yeah, that's you know, that's going to be worth something. Yeah. You're looking a long way in the future. A lot of our management plans across the site here are 3-5 years. Our woodland plans, the vision for it is looking 20, 30, 40 years ahead.
I'm Verity Warne, and you've been listening to the Earth Trust podcast. Thanks to Tim Reed, our senior ranger, for sharing his enthusiasm for trees and woodlands with us today. In part two, you can hear more from Tim on what's happening in our woods right now, from thinning to planting, and what people can do at home to nurture our precious trees.